Get ready to be mesmerized. Get ready to be entertained. Get ready to be informed. And most of all, get ready to listen. The latest sports news, great interviews, and the best coverage from around the nation's capital. It's Listen In with KNN, the sports sound of the district, right now on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio. Here's your host, Kelsey Nicole Nelson.
As you finish your leftovers from Christmas dinner and say goodbye to family and friends during this holiday season, it's time to get ready for an all-new edition of Listen In with K&N. It's a special Wednesday edition as we talk all things football. Yes, America's game. Joining me today will be the one and only Mr. Carl Francis of the National Football League Players Association. And with that, it means it's time to sit back, relax, and get ready to listen in and follow along with the conversation using hashtag Listen In with K&N.
It's time to recognize those individuals that are doing good in the community and making a difference in the sports world. Without further ado, Kelsey presents this week's Do Good Sportsperson Award nominee.
As I like to kick off every show, it's time for Kelsey's Do Good Athlete of the Week, where today I have the honor and privilege of honoring someone from right here in the DMV. That's right, the one and only Martell Spate, who plays for the Washington Redskins. So for this week's Do Good Athlete of the Week, we will be hailing to the Washington Redskins. All right, so I awarded Martell for reaching out to a young Washington Redskins fan by the name of Isaiah Shorter, who was battling a rare form of brain cancer and undergoing chemotherapy treatments. Basically, he reached out to this young fan to create a lasting memory. He drove 2 hours to surprise the young Redskins fan at his home in Pennsylvania. And not only that, he spent time with the family, eating dinner with them, and really spending time and getting to know Isaiah. And it just shows you're never too busy to make a difference in someone's life. I mean, he saw this fan at a game who held up basically a sign that said, "Fighting chemo. But that can't keep me from my team." So, of course, he's pretty much a diehard Washington Redskins fan. And he wasn't going to let his chemotherapy treatments keep him from seeing his Washington Redskins. So with that, I want to one more time honor Martrell Spate of the Washington Redskins as this week's Kelsey's Do Good Athlete of the Week. And as we round out 2017, please remember that there is always somebody that can use some extra help. This could be as simple as giving your time to give back to others, as so many are fighting many difficult battles, and sometimes you might not even know those battles. But always reach out and see if someone needs help, especially during this holiday season and as we end out the year. And as it gets colder, remember to look out for one another. So once again, thank you to Martrell Spate for leading the way and setting an example. And it's now time for a quick commercial break, and we will be right back.
Jerry's Burger Spot has all your Friday night tailgating favorites. From their never-frozen burger, fresh-cut fries, ice cream, and milkshakes, Jerry's Burger Spot offers the best lunch. And if you desire a fresh handmade burger or some delicious ice cream like Mom used to make, stop by Jerry's Burger Spot at 3815 Jefferson Park Road, Prince George, Virginia, right off 36 near Fort Lee. Jerry's Burger Spot. Remember when...
Welcome back to Listen In with K&N, the sports sound of the district and beyond. It's now time to welcome today's special guest to the show. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome the one and only Mr. Carl Francis. Carl, how are you?
I'm doing well, the one and only. Okay, I like that. Thank you, Kelsey, for having me on. I like that intro. I like that intro.
Well, good. I mean, I'm delighted to have you. You're my first guest from the NFLPA, so that's why you got that special tagline before I introduced
gotcha.
You.
Gotcha. Okay, so, I'll take it.
So quickly, I'm going to run through your bio, and then I'm going to get into some questions about yourself, if you don't mind.
Perfect, okay.
All right, cool. So Carl Francis has loved football since he began playing at age 7 in Hampton Roads, Virginia. As a football player from the youth level through high school and then into college, he has said that he has always been a fan of the NFL. He's currently the Director of Communications for the NFL Players Association, the NFLPA. He attended Virginia Union University in Richmond and started his career in public relations with the Washington Redskins. It was a great first job in the field as it allowed me to experience public relations in a fast-paced environment, he says of the experience. Francis has been with the NFLPA since 1994, and I mean, Carl, you've been doing it all, but you've always been around football. So I know you played football young, but did you ever think that football would lead you to your current position with the NFLPA?
No. When I decided to, yeah, very simple. I mean, because when you play football and you realize you're not going to the NFL, you immediately turn to, okay, what's next? People
right.
think that there's a transition with pro athletes, but it's a transition with a lot of people who have played sports for over 20 years in their life. You know, like you said, playing from 6 till like 21, I mean, that's a long time of playing football. And
mm-hmm.
whether you play in the NFL or go to college, still a transition. So anyway, one of the things that I wanted to focus, what's my next move? And I always know that I wanted to work in the front office. And football, obviously, was my first love. But if I had to get in working in hockey or baseball or soccer
right.
or what have you, that's what I was willing to do. So, but being
at
the Players Association, yeah,
it
was – this was a perfect connection for me, to be honest with you.
Okay. I mean, tell me a little bit more why. I mean, I know it's, of course, the game of football, but as you said, I mean, you could be doing so much with football, right? You could be coaching youth sports football. I mean, you could be, you know, in high school athletics football. I mean, why the NFLPA? Why is that position kind of, you know, like what's perfect for you?
Well, because most people watch the game from an entertainment standpoint. They watch mm-hmm. it for what it brings excitement and fun and fan-oriented type of environment. But for me, I watch it from a standpoint of mentorship, and I watch it for
right.
development. I watch it, you know, seeing young men trying to, you know, create a life outside of the game that is going to be far longer than what they're doing on the field. So for me, I look at the game a little differently because by me being in the business for so long, I've seen so many kids come in a certain way and leave in a certain way. And what really defines how successful of a football player you were depends on what you become 10 years after you finish playing. So that's where I look at the game, and those are the programs and the things that I like to be involved in and helping young men become productive citizens once they leave the game and not let football use them, but they use football. So that's why I'm working in the Players Association is so special to me, and I'm going to continue to do it as long as they continue to have me, or unless something else special, calls me. But for right now, I'm totally ingrained into helping these young men become productive citizens and teaching them the skill sets they need to one day come back and give some quality, productive skill sets to everyday life.
Right. I mean, I think you say that so well. I love that. You know, don't let football use them, but let them use football. I love that. And you always talk
right.
about giving back and mentorship. So tell me, I mean, currently, what kind of other things are you doing to kind of give back and mentorship? Because I know I see you everywhere. You've done panels, you've done this and that, but what else are you currently doing to give back to the community?
Well, I mean, one of the things, obviously, I'm involved with a lot of things affiliated with the NFL Players Association with mentorship, but more what's special to my heart is my foundation down in the Hampton Roads area where I'm from, Hampton, Virginia. It's called
okay.
the Hampton Roads Youth Foundation, where I've hosted a free football camp for over 21 years for high school students and middle school
wow.
students. And we've had SAT preparation courses, recruiting jamborees. We've had a lot of panel discussions on gang violence and other things that may sway some of the young people away. We've had galas to raise money. We've given over $8,000, $10,000 in scholarships. We've impacted over 8,000 youth. And so we've gotten 10 kids football scholarships through our recruiting jamboree. We bring in college coaches to interview kids, make them dress up, sit down in an interview format. So these are the things that really mean the most to me. And now we're working on a life skills development program to deal with issues off the field, such as social media, domestic violence, gang prevention, just things that really build character in these young men. So
wow.
those are the things that really drive me and keeps me balanced between working in professional sports and doing things in my community.
Wow, that's, I mean, you sound so busy, and I love that you're giving back. And I noticed most people who give back or have some type of mentorship in their life, it came from them from an early age because it happened in their life or because of their background. So can you talk a little bit more about growing up in Hampton Roads, Virginia, what it was like, you know, what there kind of instilled that sense of mentorship inside of you?
Well, because of so much history, you know, there we didn't come from a metropolitan city such as Washington, D.C., so a lot of our heroes were guys that we looked up to in high school and in summer camps and different things. So for us, our mentors were people in the community at the Boys and Girls Club, at the rec centers. And so, but my mentor was my dad. I mean, he mentored me from the very beginning, and watching him, following him, giving me advice on making good decisions and things really, really motivated me. And as I went through high school and college, I, you know, ran into professors and just men in the community that you just happen to have a conversation with, and all of a sudden they dropping little nuggets on you that you take in consideration and help you make decisions. You say, wow, you know, that's something. And so, you know, people don't understand that you don't necessarily have to be a person's father or blood related to have an impact on a child. Even if you don't know a young man, if you got something positive to relate to him, I mean, you can actually make a tremendous difference in their life just by giving them one piece of nugget that they never thought of. And so, you know, I like to challenge all men and women out there when you're talking to young people, because I've had women that, older women that I've known that have said certain things to me that, you know, gave me a lot of inspiration and knowing that and I can achieve and I can accomplish certain goals. So, I mean, when you're giving young people advice, don't ever take it for granted, because it may not register that day or the day after, but 5 years later, it may ring a bell and it may impact and change their lives forever. So you got to remember that when you're talking to young people.
Very, very true. I mean, you know, anything you say can have an impact on a young person, and we might not realize it, but so many people, you know, might look up to us. So that's why you have to watch everything, you know. And I love that you said the Boys and Girls Club. That's where I actually grew up. You know, my parents, when I was first born, their first child, they had to work a lot of jobs. So, you know, I literally grew up inside the Boys and Girls Club, and so many people touched me from there. I remember, for instance, one of my old teachers there, Mr. Clayton, and, you know, it's so many people there that, you know, helped have a hand on me, and I'm like you. You know, giving back is so important. And then Carl, the reason why I feel like I got close with you is because you went above and beyond as a professor and you pushed me. So for people that don't know, you also teach at Georgetown University School of Continuing Studies. Yep. I mean, and you're just, you know, you do amazing stuff. You taught me public relations, but also I think you invest in the individual student. So tell us a little bit about, you know, why did you start teaching at Georgetown? And, you know, what do you kind of hope students take from your class and you as a professor?
Well, you know, I started teaching because it's really a easy transition from what I do normally in public speaking, panel discussions, to teaching people something that I do every day. I mean, I'm a real life experience type of professor where I like to, you know, heck, I may have dealt with the Ezekiel Elliott issue that day, and I like to be able to take some of the elements of that case and how we manage it and bring it to class. So to me, that's real life experience. Like, yes, we use the textbook and we may use different chapters, but it's nothing like getting those real world experiences. Even in my class this year, we had some real hard discussions on Colin Kaepernick, and discussing various scenarios. And these were scenarios that we were actually meeting about with Colin and others regarding his situation, and we will bring that to class. So I enjoy seeing young people grow. I enjoy seeing young people, even if they're not interested in public relations, just become challenged by some of the things that we ask them to do and have them present it, and then be able to not necessarily critique, but kind of give a different perspective on how to look at it. So it's not to really judge, but it's really give them a different perspective on how to look at a certain issue when they're doing it. And I remember yourself as well as a number of students that have gone through that have done tremendous things beyond the classroom. And,
love
being able to teach, you know, students, and then 10, you know, maybe 5-6 years from there, they say, you remember I was in your class? And I may not even remember them, honestly, but because there's so many students, but they'll be like, I'm the director of this. I'm like, that's the goal. Like, that's the goal. I remember about 10 years ago, I had a young lady that worked for me, came in as an administrative assistant. And she worked about 7 years for me, and she left to go work with the, she left because I allowed her to do some other things in the office, and then she left to go work for the Nationals. She called me one day. She was like, Carl, I said, hey, how you doing? She said, fine. She said, you want to be mad at me? I said, mad? What do you mean mad? She said, well, you know, they just named me Director of Communications. I said, why should I be mad? I said, listen, the only reason I'm here is to make sure that you become better than me and grow more than me, because that's what we do when we support. And I said, the reason I let you do all these things and experience these other skill sets is because I wanted you to be able to have those skill sets to say, one day I'm going to become a Director of Communications. So if you're not helping people grow, I don't think you'll grow as a person, and I don't think that you'll achieve levels of success as an individual if you don't instill in somebody else. So that's how you kind of look at it day to day.
Well said. And, you know, I feel like, you know, we hear Director of Communications title, but I don't know if everybody knows what that entails. So can you briefly go through, you know, what's your everyday day like working for the NFLPA? And then give me what's the biggest challenge that you've faced, let's just say this NFL season, since I know you've probably faced a number.
I think the day-to-day, you either come in, meet as a staff, talk about the previous day's issues, and wake up to see what happened throughout the night, and talk, and there's always some issue that's going on or something that's lingering, and some cases out there, some fine appeal or something, and discuss any new updates, and then we'll take a look around the business of football to see what's out there, and even other sports, and then we'll make some phone calls. You know, we'll follow up and take a look to see, you know, kind of follow up on some phone calls just to help those people, you know, get some questions answered. And then we follow up we'll check out some tweets to see, you know, are there any issues going on out there, and just kind of review the whole landscape of the media. And then from there, you know, like I said, we meet as a staff, and we got so many outstanding projects that we're working on. We kind of follow up on those. So I work on Celebrity Family Feud with Steve Harvey Show, so that's coming up this weekend. And we're also seasonal for us, too, because we're going to our event season. So we have a lot of events going on between January and May. So that keeps us very, very busy throughout those 5 months. So, it's biggest challenge this year was Colin Kaepernick, because it took every day the story took a different turn, and it's hard for us to get in front of it.
Right.
Even though we did speak with Colin, there were so many different facets, different players were doing so many different things, which we thought were positive, but trying to streamline all of those efforts into one became challenging, because it's different when you're dealing with the I can't breathe issue related to the NFL players or to wear shirts, because you're only talking about 300 guys, but when you're talking about, you know, 2000 or 1800, that's a little bit more challenging. And so it's hard funneling that, but I think at the end of the day, you know, the one of the things that we're most proud of is players expressing themselves, taking a hard role into the societal platform that they're given, even as athletes, utilizing it for something positive that impacts their own communities. And I think that was good and very educational for our players, too.
Right. I mean, I think you said that so well, and this is why this is one of my favorite times of the season, because I love seeing all the different players that are nominated for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, because it shows, you know, these players are doing more than just stuff on the field. They're giving back to their communities, because many of these players came from these communities, you know, and they probably had people touch them, and now they're giving back. So I know that's an exciting part of your job. But Carl, I have to be blunt with you and ask you a question that I know everybody is going to want me to ask you, and I want you to give me your personal opinion as much as you can. Will we see Colin Kaepernick back in an NFL uniform?
Hard to say. I really don't know. I don't even know if he wants to play at this point. Like I said, the narrative changes so many times that I'm not sure. I mean, being out a whole year is a little challenging. And like you mentioned, I mean, Colin has taken so many different roles in terms of this issue that it's hard to say. So without me actually talking to him, I have no idea what he wants to do. But I do believe he should. Yeah, that's fine, perfectly fine, yeah.
Well, you know, with that, you know, you're from Virginia, so I want to kick it off with my Doing It Big in the DMV segment, as I always like to do. So I'm going to assume you grew up a Washington Redskins fan.
No, I didn't.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, what fan are you?
Well, I was a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, but I'm not a fan of anybody now.
I was going to say, why is it? Oh, okay, right, because you can't be, right?
Well, No. I just follow a lot of guys, a lot of young men that I've followed from high school on up, and I root for them, make sure they are, you know, successful, and I like watching. But I like watching good football, you know. I used to work for the Redskins, but I don't know any of those guys now. So, like I said, I connect with individuals, not necessarily with teams.
Got you. Well, I hope you'll ride with me as we talk the Washington Redskins, because I'm going to talk with the guy that I'm sure you've had maybe some discussions with, and that is Kirk Cousins, of course, who all eyes are on. And Tuesday, the Washington Redskins head coach Jay Gruden announced that Kirk Cousins would start Sunday's finale game against the New York Giants on the road, even though some people, Carl, are worried about potential of an injury. And of course, I mean, even though no postseason ramifications are involved since the Redskins are out of the playoffs. Now, this news came, of course, after the Washington Redskins on Sunday defeated the Denver Broncos 27-11 on Tuesday's conference call. Basically, Gruden added, Kirk wants to finish out the season. Got to get us back to 8-8. I think finishing on a three-game winning streak is important to a lot of people here. Finishing strong is what we've been preaching here for the last 2 to 3 weeks. But, of course, Carl, the big question is, will Cousins play for the Redskins in 2018 and beyond? And I'm just curious to hear, I mean, how do you like Kirk Cousins' play so far this season? And do you think he would be, you know, likely back in a Washington Redskins uniform next season?
I think Kirk plays great. I think Kirk, you know, Kirk is a rep. He's a player rep for us. He's a great leader. He's a great teammate. And he's a great individual and extremely smart, highly intelligent quarterback. And, look, when you look at the quarterback play in the National Football League, I don't see Kirk being any less than anybody else out there that's competing today. I think he's up in the top echelon of quarterbacks in the league, and I do think he'll be at the Redskins. I do think the Redskins would be smart enough to sign him to a long-term deal because anywhere Kirk goes, I mean, Kirk will be successful because he can adapt. I mean, people forget, you know, Kirk went through a roller coaster with RG3.
Right,
and
we remember those.
But he maintained composure and just kept his mind at an even keel and just performed every week.
Right.
Amidst all the different distractions. But I do think that he will be back in a Redskins uniform. I do believe Redskins know how valuable he is, not just the community, but just to the team, to the leadership. I mean, we've all seen Kirk grow from a rookie down to a real respectable leader on his team. And I think that with that, I do think that he will be in a Redskins uniform next year.
Well said. I mean, I think you said it great. I think he does have leadership of that team. I mean, watching Sunday's game, the difference I noticed between him and Brock Osweiler was that the difference when Cousins, you know, kind of got mad at himself or wanted his team to play, the guys were listening to him. They were listening and learning, whereas we saw Brock on the other sidelines trying to get his team to listen, but it seemed like his message was falling on deaf ears, quite frankly. But I think that's right. What Kirk has. I mean, he's been with the team. You know, the guys know him, as you said. I mean, he's been there even when he was behind RG3, and everybody knows what happened with that situation. But, you know, there's a lot of big decisions for the Redskins organization to make. Cousins, of course, has played the past two seasons on the franchise tag. The Redskins could go that route again unless, you know, the sides agree to a long-term deal. But if they don't, of course, he could also test free agency. And interestingly enough, you said Cousins has played well. I don't think people know this, but Cousins needs only 65 more yards against New York to reach 4,000 yards for a third consecutive season. Wow. I mean, that just kind of talks about some of the great stuff he's doing in Washington. He has 27 touchdown passes on the season. And, of course, he started all 47 games since taking over as starter in 2015. And then, Carl, if that's not enough, even Broncos star Von Miller and Chris Harris were basically praising Kirk Cousins, who threw for 299 yards and 3 touchdowns against the league's number one defense. I mean, I think data can kind of tell you that he's playing well. Even though, Carl, some people are saying they're kind of using that, of course, because some people believe if Kirk hits the free market, that Denver will be one of the landing spots. But you're basically saying you don't think he's going to Denver.
I mean, you said it all. I mean, it's just, you know, to repeat it would just be preaching to the choir, but you said it all. Like, you know.
I mean, he's doing it, basically.
Finding a franchise quarterback is not like waking up in the morning. You know, just plucking a guy out of the sky. That's very hard.
Right.
And to draft is an inexact science. You know, finding a Carson Wentz or a Deshaun Watson is not easy. So when you have one, you have to you have to embrace them and you have to grow and you have to support them. You know,
right.
Everybody wants the microwave Super Bowl, but it doesn't exist.
Right.
Okay. You look at Drew Brees going through his frustration with the shoulder from San Diego to New Orleans, right?
Mm,
you look at Peyton
right.
Manning. Peyton Manning struggled the first 4 years of his career. He became who he was. He finished his
very
career.
Very true.
And then you look at Tom Brady. I mean, you have to find those guys and you have to hold them. You have to develop
right.
them. And more importantly, you have to support them and surround them with great people. You
right.
know, and you for surrounding with a great system, an opportunity to succeed. So with all that being said, in addition to what you said, there's no
mm-hmm.
doubt in my mind he'll be back in a Redskins uniform.
He's got to stay with Washington, right?
next year, absolutely.
And you know, someone else you mentioned was RG3, and that gets me to thinking, you know, RG3 has actually got some criticism, Carl, from people basically saying, I mean, he doesn't have a job right now in the NFL yet. When it was, you know, reported that teams have reached out to him basically saying that he doesn't want to play with certain teams. So I want to know, I'm curious to hear from you. I mean, do you think, you know, he has that ability to kind of be picky since he's not right now playing with any team? Or, you know, do you think this is just more strategic on his side?
I don't know that to be true. I would be shocked if RG3, a man who has been out this entire campaign as well as
mm-hmm.
part of the last year campaign, has gone through what he's been through, would
mm-hmm.
pick and choose where he wants to go. I think to play in this league is a privilege.
Right.
I think to be given an opportunity in this league is something that for everyone to be grateful for. And I know Robert has been through a lot with injuries. And so he has a lot to be thankful for, just to be able to be back in tip-top shape.
Right. Some people don't come back from those injuries.
Right. He's needed time to heal, rest, and be as strong as he is. And do I think he can play in his league and be a star? Absolutely. But I'm be interested in seeing the validity of those reports that he's picking and choosing where he wants to play. He's a competitor.
Right.
He is a
right.
competitor.
So it shouldn't matter where you go.
Right. Robert believes, you know, you can put him anywhere in the league and he'll win. That's just his mindset in terms of what I've seen from a distance, because I don't know him personally. But just
right.
watching him from a distance and seeing him at Bill, he is a competitor. Give me the
right.
team. Tell me what we need to get done, and we'll get it done. But it's not easy at this level.
It's
takes
not.
A lot. And so I think that he has the ability, and I think
mm-hmm.
that we'll see him again one day in a uniform.
I think that would be exciting. I mean, I still remember the RG3 mania, Carl, that hit the DMV area when he was playing for the Washington Redskins. Everybody and their mom had an RG3 jersey. So I would be excited,
yeah.
you know, to see him back with the team. I think he's still young. And as you said, I mean, sometimes it takes time. But I think with the right offensive line in front of him, I think RG3 can do some amazing things. And for Redskins fans, just so they know, defensive lineman Ziggy Hood's fractured elbow suffered against Denver will not require surgery. So I wanted to make Redskins fans a little bit happier after the Christmas holiday. But now, Carl, I hope you'll go with me to basketball with the Washington Wizards and the DMV, which, of course, I mean, what a Christmas, you know, day present everyone here in the DMV got as they beat the Boston Celtics 111-103 for their first Christmas Day victory, Carl, since 2014. Wow. And who thought they would beat, you know, Boston? I mean, the Wizards, you know, they've been playing pretty solid this year. Hasn't been the best. Of course, they pretty much got embarrassed Friday night in Brooklyn against the Brooklyn Nets. They found themselves down by 40 against the Nets team right now that's the worst in the NBA. But then, of course, they came back home. I think they're always good at home. They scored 130 points in regulation against the Orlando Magic. And then, get this, then they beat Boston, who, of course, is leading the East. I mean, who would have thought that? So I'm just curious to hear your thoughts, Carl. What's going right in Washington with the Wizards that now they're on this 3-game winning streak?
I mean, they're only picking up where they lost. They're only picking up where they left off last year.
And competing with
Boston. I think their confidence is there as a team. I think they have great coaching. I think they're
mm-hmm.
coming together as a unit. I think, you know, they knew John Wall was the star of the team, but now Bradley Beal is maximizing his efforts to becoming
right.
an all-star this year. And then they have
right.
everybody else, Gortat, and everybody else playing around him as a nucleus in it. And then you have the young man coming off the bench. I forget his name right now.
Kelly Oubre Jr.
Kelly Oubre Jr. is coming in, fulfilling his role. And championships are built on roles. It's not built on
yes.
stars. It's built on roles. Like, you do have to have a star player, but that star player knows that everybody has a role.
Exactly,
In a play. And I think that that's what's happening with the Wizards. And so I can expect bigger and better things as they continue to build their confidence. I think this is a great win for them as an organization that they take this and move forward and take every game, you know, seriously and one game at a time. Don't look beyond that. Don't get excited because you beat Kyrie. You know, you gotta take on the next challenge, even if it's Utah. So you gotta keep winning, and it's hard, and you gotta lead, and you gotta grow. And so I think they'll be okay as they continue to develop as a team.
You know, I think you said it well. I mean, they're playing well all together. And as you said, the emergence of Bradley Beal next to John Wall, I mean, talk about a strong backcourt. Well, there you go. Because Bradley Beal got that big contract, but now I think he's playing for it. And he's really making a name for himself. And as you said, all-star. I think he definitely needs to be in that conversation. And Kelly Oubre Jr. off the bench has been magnificent. And then, of course, Otto Porter Jr. from Georgetown. I mean, Gortat. I mean, the Wizards really have what it takes. Of course, it's just getting it all together. And then, of course, throw Markieff Morris in the mix. And I think you really have a team that can compete in the East, of course, because Boston and the Cavs are leading it, but watch out for the Wizards, I'm telling everybody, and we still have a lot of play left. I mean, they're stretching the floor more. They're creating more space for guards. Defensively, I'm more proud, and I don't know, when you beat Boston, that's a true confidence builder, so I think they'll take that with them, you know, into their next game.
Now, Carl,
I want to transition to Kelsey's Across the Nation segment, and I want to stay on basketball because I'm sure on Christmas Day you had a chance to watch basketball because I'm going to assume you weren't in the kitchen cooking, Carl, even though you might have. I don't know. Are you a cook?
Yeah, absolutely. I help cook a little bit. Yeah,
oh, well, look at you. You help with the size, right?
Yeah, absolutely, the size.
I'm not going to assume you put the whole turkey in, but if you did, you know, I'd be very, very impressed.
No, not quite, but the size.
But, of course, Christmas Day, everyone was looking forward to the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers going at it. But most of the news was based on LeBron James and Kevin Durant when LeBron James basically said KD got away with a foul on him in the final minute of the Golden State Warriors' 99-92 win over the Cleveland Cavaliers on Christmas Day, while Durant actually defended the referee's no call. So James said, "He fouled me twice." James said on his drive to the hoop with the Cavs down 95-92 when Durant blocked James' shot and he lost it out of bounds. But whatever, what are you going to do about it? James added. And then, of course, cameras on ABC's broadcast of Monday's game showed Durant shrugging off the contact that he made with James while officials reviewed the play. But basically, I thought the funny part was Durant said, "He's too big. He's too big. He's too big for that. He's too big. That ain't no foul." So I'm just curious. You know, some people are basically saying that KD has this new confidence and he's not afraid to talk smack since he's around Draymond Green. But do you think, I mean, we're just really seeing the emergence of KD? Of course, we know him as an offensive player, but do you think he's really just emerging as a defensive player? Or I don't know if you watched it, but was that a clear foul? And is James just not earning the respect of referees?
To me, it is a foul. It was a foul, but I look at it the same as people used to foul Shaq and say, "Well, you're so big. What do you want me to do?"
True, right?
The foul is the foul. But at the same time, I do think KD is emerging as a defender. I think that first championship has really motivated him, and he's playing with a very, very veteran, smart, heavy-loaded team. And I think that everybody knows those guys do play defense at Golden State, and I think he's fitting right in. And blending in, and I think he's bought into that defensive mindset, and he's competing. So you know that's good for KD. KD is a very extreme talent, but people know that you know talent don't necessarily win championships. It's your IQ, and it's your skill matched together with your will. And I think KD now is bringing all that together, and he's definitely separating himself from everybody out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it well, and even James, he was asked if Durant is the toughest individual matchup in the league, and James said he is right up there, if not the best. He said, of course, Kawhi Leonard is up there, Russell Westbrook is up there, and James Harden, he said there's a pretty long list. But to play kind of the same position with me and KD being small forwards with Kawhi, so we do a great job of going at it. So, I mean, he got the respect of the king. So that, I think, you know, that just kind of says it. But I don't know. Everyone's calling this and that about the foul. Let them play. The Warriors won this one. I mean, I think many people, you know, we always expect to see them going at it. But it was good basketball. I wasn't disappointed.
Good basketball.
Basketball.
Yeah, I agree.
No complaints. So now I'm going to switch it back over to football for my Football Minuteman and Biggest Headlines in Sports segment, where I want to talk about the Pro Bowl selection. So my last show I was able to get through the offense, but this show with you, Carl, I want to go through the defense since there's so many names, but I'm going to start with the AFC. So for the defensive ends, we have Joey Bosa of the Chargers, Calais Campbell of the Jaguars, Khalil Mack of the Raiders. Interior linemen, we have Geno Atkins of the Bengals, Jarrell Casey of the Titans, Malik Jackson of the Jaguars. Outside linebackers, no surprise here, Von Miller of the Broncos, Clowney of the Texans, and Terrell Suggs of the Baltimore Ravens. Inside middle linebacker, C.J. Mosley of the Ravens, and Ryan Shazier of the Steelers. Cornerback, we have A.J. Boye with the Jaguars, Jalen Ramsey with the Jaguars, Talib with the Broncos, Casey Hayward with the Chargers, free safety, Eric Weddle with the Ravens, and, of course, strong safety, Rashid Jones of the Dolphins, and Mekhi Hyde of the Bills. So I want to know, any of those names really stand out to you in the AFC on defense, you know, that you think really have played great this season to really deserve to be there, even though, of course, they all do. But any standout names?
I think the selection committee did a great job. I think all of them, honestly, in their own way, mm-hmm. has had great seasons, particularly Jalen Ramsey, Bosa.
Yeah.
And those guys. And to be honest with you, I have not watched a lot of football to be able to say, but
you're busy, so no problem.
Yeah, right. So it's really difficult for me to really analyze every one or one or two of those guys, but I do know that Jalen Ramsey has had a great
yeah.
campaign this year, and I know Bosa, you know, has really stepped up his play in leading
mm-hmm.
San Diego. So those are the two names that stand out. And Calais Campbell as well. I know that
yeah.
was a big free agency piece on him. On Players Tribune, and he looked like he chose the right team. So with those
yeah.
guys, I think they're right there where they need to be. But the bowl committee did a great job selecting those players.
I mean, I completely agree. I think all these names, you know, stand out, especially the Jaguars players. I mean, you've never really thought of, I think, the Jaguars team in a while to be a defensive front, but wow, the Jaguars defense has been playing some great football this year. You said Calais Campbell. That name really stands out. Dominic Foxworth on Tuesday on First Take actually said that would be his league MVP candidate. So talk about playing great football. That pretty much has him up there. And then now I'm going to transition to the NFC and give the names of those defensive players. So for defensive end, we have Everson Griffin with the Vikings, DeMarcus Lawrence with the Cowboys, Cameron Jordan with the Saints. Interior lineman, we have Fletcher Cox with the Eagles, Aaron Donald with the Rams, Gerald McCoy with the Buccaneers, outside linebacker Chandler Jones with the Cardinals, Ryan Kerrigan with the Washington Redskins, Anthony Barr with the Vikings, inside middle linebackers, Luke Kelechi of the Panthers, and Bobby Wagner of the Seahawks. Cornerback, Xavier Rhodes of the Vikings, Patrick Peterson with the Cardinals, Marshawn Lattimore with the Saints, Darius Slay with the Lions, free safety, Eric Thomas with the Seahawks, and strong safety, Landon Collins with the Giants, and Malcolm Jenkins with the Eagles. Now, I'll tell you real quick, I mean, the Saints, I think, really came to play, so I think it's really great having some of the Saints on defense, because the Saints is another team, Carl, I think, you know, really hasn't got respect in a while for defense, because we always think of Drew Brees and that explosive offense. But any names on the NFC side, you know, really stand out to you?
Yeah, you know, to be honest with you, like I mentioned, I haven't had a chance to really look at a lot of guys in that space, but a lot of those names that I've heard throughout
mm-hmm.
the course of the season making big plays, I do believe, like I say, this is going to be a really great Pro Bowl year, and
yeah.
hopefully we see a competitive Pro Bowl, and I'm looking forward to seeing
yeah.
these young men go really compete at a high level to give fans something exciting to see as we close out the season.
I think you said it well, you know, a competitive Pro Bowl, but I'm just curious to hear from you. I mean, what do you think the league kind of needs to do to get more people watching the Pro Bowl? Is it just that competitive nature? I mean,
no,
what do you think?
It's just the game. The game
mm-hmm.
needs to be played well. And I think the players are understanding fans want to see good competitive football. They want to see
right.
their stars compete against each other. So hopefully we'll get that this year. And I know the league is working very hard to get there. And the union is working closely trying to make sure that we put a product together that's safe and that players can enjoy and players want to participate in. And if
yeah.
the players feel as though there needs to be a shift in that, then we'll talk about it. But other than that, I just think the fans are looking for competitive football. That's all.
I completely agree. I mean, I think the NBA All-Star Game is facing, you know, the same difficulties. Fans want to see competition, right? You got the best players of the game going at it. Of course, you don't want to see anybody get injured, but you still want it to be, you know, a game that fans can compete. I mean, the players compete in that fans can really cheer for, because you want it to mean something when a team wins it. So, I'm always excited about the Pro Bowl, but I'm also a football fan. But hopefully this year brings some more competition. But now, Carl, I want to switch it over to a feel-good story in the Steelers versus Texans game that recently happened, and that is a story of David Questenberry, who, if fans don't know, of course, the Texans, I know it's hard, right? The Texans just lost the other night, and really the season has kind of went down, of course, since Deshaun Watson was injured and announced out for the year. But for one player, it was the biggest game that he's ever played because of what it represented. So if you don't know his story, Texans offensive lineman David Questenberry got in as an extra blocker, marking his first action since coming back from a battle with cancer, which lasted 3 years. After the game, he said, "It was everything I dreamed of while I was going through my treatment." He told Aaron Wilson of the Houston Chronicle, "Playing a full-speed game was exactly how I hoped it went. I would say it was very emotional for me and the people around me and for my family watching. It was just something special." The former sixth-rounder was diagnosed with Hodgkin T lymphoma in 2014 and went through years of treatment, including chemotherapy. Surviving was one thing, but to get back and to be in that kind of shape required to play in the NFL was another. He lost 70 pounds during his treatment, which means that he had to gain them back. He was just promoted from the practice squad last week, if that's hard to believe. And then the Texans made him a captain for yesterday's game in recognition of his work to get back. But basically, he said once the game started, he had a job to do. So I'm just kind of curious, Carl, what were your thoughts when you heard, you know, this kind of triumphant story of overcoming obstacles to get back into the NFL?
I mean, it's one of our – it's what makes our league great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that story, I've heard that story so many times from different players going through different obstacles,
yeah.
But that's what makes our family great. It's stories
yeah.
like that, fans connecting, making sure that they understand that these players are real people. They make real
right.
they make real hard decisions, and they're family men, their fathers, their uncles, their brothers. And so this story is an unbelievable story on commitment and drive, and it's right along up there with so many that I've seen over the past. So it's a very good story.
I love it. I mean, those stories will never get old to me, Carl. It's like I can hear
That's
it a million
right.
times, but I mean, it's just
me
a feel good, especially after the holidays. I mean, overcoming cancer is one thing, but to get back to playing, you know, such a physical game like football, that's another. So I know he's inspiring kids out there, you know, shows us that any of us can, you know, overcome stuff. So that was a feel good story. But now to switch it over to a not so feel good story, Carl, I have to talk with you about this controversial catch rule that is driving everyone and their mom crazy. So if we thought last week's football wasn't enough, in Sunday's Patriots-Bills game, Buffalo wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin appeared to haul in a toe-tapping touchdown that would have given the Bills a lead in the second quarter. He caught the pass over Patriots quarterback Stephen Gilmore near the back pylon in the right side of the end zone. It appeared as if Benjamin got both feet in bounds and maintained possession. The play was first ruled a touchdown, but after a replay review, it was overturned. And after the game, basically the referee, Craig, gave his defense of the decision that he made. He said when the receiver got confirmed control of the football, he was not able to get both feet in bounds, down in bounds. So his back foot was already off the ground and it stepped out of bounds. His firm control did not occur until after he had one foot off the ground. And of course, we know how the game went. The Patriots went on to win 37-16 after outscoring the Bills 24-3 in the second half. So, Carl, I'm just going to make this question simple. I mean, how can we make this catch rule just not so controversial?
You know what? I didn't see the catch, to be honest, so it's hard for me to make a comment on it. But, you know, the rules are reviewed every year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's no different, I guess, the Dez Bryant rule. We'll have to continue to take a look at it and see how it plays during offseason. But
right.
I would say that, you know, like I said, football is football. It's full of controversy. So I guess this is no different. We'll see
right.
how it plays out.
That's what I'll say. It wouldn't be football without controversy. And now, like you said, the Dez Bryant
right.
catch kind of started all this. I think it'll always be fans mad, but I do think they need to relook at the rule because I don't think you want any rule that's too complicated, right, where we have to do all this
right.
to determine if it's a catch. Because I'm like, what are you teaching
right.
these guys trying to get to the NFL? It's so complicated now. So I think just keep
right.
it simple. Catch is a catch, and then we don't have to have all these people attacking referees on Twitter and
yep.
stuff like they're doing every Sunday. But
yep.
I also want to go back to Christmas because the Philadelphia Eagles played the Oakland Raiders, and the Philadelphia Eagles have been rolling 13 victories. They are the number one seed in the NFC playoffs. But, of course, the big story around the Eagles was the impact of losing their quarterback, Carson Wentz. But he did make his first public appearance since tearing his ACL in his left knee in week 14 against the Los Angeles Rams. He joined his teammates on the field during warmups, And, you know, he helped, basically. He served as, like, kind of like a hype man. He served as captain during the coin flip, and he drew MVP chants when he was shown on the big screen. But, of course, Nick Foles is now the new captain, kind of, that team, trying to generate the offense. But he really hasn't had that magic that has been with the Eagles offense all season, including last week at the New York Giants in Foles' first start of the year. And then it kind of crashed again against the Raiders. The top-scoring team in football, the Eagles, managed just 13 points and 216 yards on offense against an Oakland defense that ranks in the bottom half of the league in passing yards and points allowed. And then third-down efficiency was particularly telling. The Eagles went 1 of 14 on third down, the lone conversion coming on a Clement run. So I just kind of want to hear from you, Carl. I mean, what would you assure Eagles fans, you know, behind Nick Foles? Or are you still kind of trying to figure him out? Because, you know, Eagles fans are asking. They've been talking a lot of smack, Carl.
it's hard for me, Kelsey, because I don't watch football that heavy to talk to Philly fans, but Nick Foles is a proven veteran. He's been there a long time, and I'm sure that he can lead them to some victories. Just not sure how far. But
right.
So the most important thing is to ensure that Carson comes back healthy and back to where he left. So I think that's the most important thing, to be honest with you.
Right. I mean, that's what we all want, right? We want Carson to come back. But I think you have to believe in your team, right? You can't just be a fair-weather fan. And I think the quarterbacks, I mean, when you're at an NFL stadium, you know, the players are hearing that. They want to hear that support. So you got to give them a chance. And let's face it, I mean, as I switch to NFL playoff standings, he is going to be the quarterback that will be leading you there. So, I mean, you want to get behind him, of course, right? Eagles are looking for that Super Bowl win. And, I mean,
absolutely.
I don't know. I'm rooting for them. They've had a great season. So to give fans the NFL playoff standings in the NFC, the bye week right now has been secured by the Philadelphia Eagles and the Minnesota Vikings. Divisional and wild card races will be between the Rams, the Falcons, the Panthers, and the Saints. And then the bye week in the AFC, of course, goes to the Pittsburgh Steelers and the New England Patriots. And the divisional wild card games will be between the Jaguars at the third seed, the Titans at the sixth, the Ravens at the 5, and the Chiefs in the 4th. In the hunt for the AFC, Los Angeles Chargers and the Buffalo Bills. And in the hunt for the NFC, the Seattle Seahawks. So, you know, some people, Carl, are looking at that we might have a possible rematch of last year's Super Bowl between the Patriots and the Falcons. But I'm just curious, if you had to guess today, who would you tell me is going to face each other in the Super Bowl?
Man, that's tough.
That's a hard one.
Because I don't look at it every day. You know, it's hard for me. I mean, New England, you always got
to
talk about New England. You got
to
talk about Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I would talk about Philly, but without Carson, it's tough. And, you know,
it's
you got Pittsburgh. So, you know,
it's
it could be very well Pittsburgh. But it's really difficult for me, to be honest with you, because I just haven't watched it that much to really analyze it. Probably some of your guests, but I just haven't. Studied it. Like, I
think you just don't want to be wrong, Carl.
No, well, maybe. That may be it, too. Yeah.
I will let you slide on that. But I think, nonetheless, we will be in for a good Super Bowl. I'll give my personal opinion. I don't want to see the Patriots and the Falcons again. I'd like to see a new team. You know, I'm tired of Tom Brady being so terrific. I want to see a new team from the AFC. But I don't know, you know, if any team will have what it takes to overcome them. But we shall see. And in the NFC, I'm like you. I don't know. Without Carson Wentz, I don't know about the Eagles. But I don't know. The Saints have been red hot. So I think it would be nice to see them back in the Super Bowl, because it's been a little while. But now I'm going to transition to my Kelsey's Are You Serious Right Now segment. And this was something that happened a couple weeks ago, but I really just want to get your thoughts on it because I don't think it got enough attention. So I'm going to transition now to talking about Damian Lillard and some gay slurs that were actually uttered at him. So the Portland Trailblazers lost to the Minnesota Timberwolves 108-107 last Monday, but it was the actions of two fans after the game that were the most disappointing. So according to a report from ESPN's Chris Haynes, two individuals shouted anti-gay slurs at Blazers guard Damian Lillard as he walked to the team bus after the game. So Haynes said that Lillard confirmed to ESPN that phrases were shouted at him. He said, "I don't bother nobody." He told ESPN they were straight disrespectful. So a video captured the irritated guard approaching the fans, demanding to know who said the slurs. A woman in the area pointed out to one of the individuals, and that person apologizes. Sources at the scene say no action was taken against the fans. So I bring this up for multiple reasons. So, of course, we saw the incident in the NFL where fans were talking trash to actually a Jaguars player, right? And that player actually almost got into the stands to basically want to fight the fans that said something. So I'm just curious to you, do you think there needs to be some type of more security at NFL and NFL games to kind of, you know, stop players from getting into it with fans so we don't have, you know, another Malice at the Palace incident happening?
I mean, I think we do. I just think sometimes you get fans who get a little intoxicated, and I think they want to have a little bit too much fun, and they want to enjoy themselves a little much and believe that the players are pieces of entertainment that they can pull on and poke at, and I think that sometimes it gets out of hand. But for the most part, I do think security does an outstanding job of making sure those fans are escorted out when they're rude and disruptive with the game.
Right, because I think, you know, it can be hard, right? There's so many fans in the game, and I think people are always like, you know, we'll kick them out. But I'm always like, even if you just kick them out, you know, they could come back and buy tickets under a different name. And, you know, it's hard to keep track because so many people are going to these games. But I think security does well, but, you know, you never want to see players and fans get into it. But then I also bring this topic up because the topic came up of basically do people think, you know, the NBA is ready to embrace, you know, if they do ever have another player that identifies as gay. And I bring that up just because, of course, Jason Collins was a huge story when it came out. But I'm just curious, do you think fans in both the NBA as a league and, you know, players would be ready if there were another gay player to come out in the NBA?
I'm not sure. I mean, it's hard for me to speak on that. I mean, that subject has really already been addressed. I don't think it'll be a problem at all, to be honest with you. I honestly don't think so. I mean, it's a whole discussion now. Everybody's open. Everybody's acceptable. So I think that'd be fine.
Right. And you would like to think that, you know, fans would be able to accept it and that if there were no negative phrases will be uttered. But you just hate anytime anybody says something nasty. You know, it's a game. I understand people get into sports and stuff, but they're also human beings, you know, and so saying nasty things to them, you know, is no tolerance. And hopefully people learn from that incident. But now, Carl, when it's in my show, as I do every show with my Woman Crush Everyday segment, on a more positive note, I want to talk about this extraordinary young lady by the name of Mommy Biney. Now, I'm talking about her because she's a Ghana-born teen, and she is the first African-American woman on the U.S. Olympic speed skating team. I mean, how incredible is that? 2017 is ending on an amazing note. And just so people kind of know her story, at the age of 5, Mommy Biney immigrated to the U.S. from Ghana to live with her father. Her story goes a little bit like this. One day they drove by a local ice rink in Reston, Virginia, where a sign in front read, "Learn to Skate." Biney's father asked if she wanted to give it a try. Of course, she was hooked. Every morning, she would bounce out of bed to wake up her father for the early morning practices. She tried figure skating at first, but a coach noticed how fast she was and encouraged her to take up speed skating. She competed in local events before moving up to the U.S. Junior Championships, where she won a bronze medal. This month, she qualified for the U.S. Olympic team after finishing first in the women's 500-meter trial in Utah. At the age of 17, she is the youngest speed skater on the U.S. team and the first African-American woman to represent the country as a speed skater. She will compete at the 2018 Winter Olympics in South Korea in February. Her event is the 500-meter, and it's the shortest, but it requires intense sprinting ability. So she said her strategy is simple. Go fast and don't fall. That seems simple enough.
There you go.
And her achievements have earned her fans around the world, and I love this part. Particularly, she has gay fans in West Africa, where skating isn't common. She hopes girls watch her and become inspired to pursue their own dreams. So she's another Virginia native like you, Carl. I mean, grew up in Reston, Virginia. I'm just kind of curious, what do you think after hearing her story?
I mean, it's nothing short of what we expect out of our young people.
This
is an amazing story, and we continue to hear more. I'm sure the entire Reston, state of Virginia, and DMV area, as well as everybody else in the country, would be rooting for her. So it's another feel-good story with great results, and I expect nothing from the best from her, and I think it's awesome. It's a great story.
Amazing.
The one that our young girls will and young men will be able to aspire to look upon. I really do.
Yes, and I love that you added young men, too, because, right, just when you see, even when you see a different sex, I mean, it shouldn't, you know, make you think, oh, I can't look up to them. Yes, you can, because obviously, you know, you can do that, too, and I think it's great, and I think she's exposing a new part of the world to a sport that they can get into. I mean, we already saw Nigeria, their women are going to have their first bobsledding team in the Olympics. Now we have this. I mean, it's just so many incredible things happening. I hope people see that sports, you know, it isn't limited to anyone, and if you don't see anybody, like you in a sport, get into it. You know, you could be the first as she is, and I can't wait to see future girls playing with her Barbie, you know, and wanting to speed skate, and I think, you know, more people should get into it. You never know what's going to happen, and then I also, Carl, liked the part of her story where they said she was too fast for figure skating, but she didn't let that get her down. She turned into speed skating, and now she's an Olympic, you know, she's going to be in the Olympics. So that just tells you maybe if, you know, you're told no for something, try something else, and guess what? It could work out for you. So I think
agree.
She's very incredible. She's 17 years old. I think, you know, we'll all be rooting for her. So go ahead, Miss Viney. Well, Carl, thank you so much for joining me. This was a blast. It was a blast having you on.
Awesome.
Thanks so much
for
making
time. Thank you for
having me. No problem. And for everyone listening, that's a wrap of this edition of Listen In with K&N. I hope you had fun, learned something, and, of course, jumped in on the K&N bandwagon. Be sure to listen in each and every week for new shows that drop online at foxsports1340am.com and kelseynicolenelson.com. And don't forget, the show comes out every Tuesday and Thursday, but of course with today, sometimes a special Wednesday. If that's not enough, the show is available for downloads on iTunes and Google Play. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Your feedback and support matter. Until next week, enjoy the sports world, smile, and don't take your fantasy sports too seriously, because there's always another play.
Advertisement and sponsorship opportunities are now available for Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio, WHAP. Become a part of the hottest new sports talk show in the nation's capital, fueled by one of the largest national sports radio networks. Hosted by award-winning sports personality Kelsey Nicole Nelson, Listen In with KNN brings listeners the latest trending topics in sports and in entertainment each week. So, if you're looking to maximize your brand's exposure alongside the best local and national sports coverage, plus special live editions of Listen In with K&N from venues around the region, email Kelsey at kelseynelson@foxsports1340am.com. For more information about Listen In with K&N, visit foxsports1340am.com. Follow Kelsey on Twitter at TheRealKNelson. You've been listening to Listen In with KNN on AM 1340 and 96.9 FM, Fox Sports Radio.